Weed is on the tear on a Wednesday while Row Crops kind of just sit and watch. How do we finish this crazy week?
Live from a tillerific afternoon via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we talk with Karen Braun from Reuters. And right after the news, Todd Bubba Horowitz from BubbaTrading.com. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, filling in for Chip, from Zahner Ag Hedge, the cool breeze from the Windy City, Ted's Hyfred! How you doing, cool breeze?
I'm doing great, man. That's quite the intro you got there, buddy. I really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
How's everything?
You've earned it.
How's everything in Sparkle City?
Everything is just fine. Slightly overcast today. A little bit cooler. Had some showers late yesterday. And, apparently the corn market noticed.
Yeah, apparently the corn market noticed. Although the big one was last Thursday when we came in on Friday morning. That was something else. We all kind of thought that was going to be less than what the forecast models had been expecting, but it wasn't. So, yes, we are living in a different world this week than what we were living in last week, apparently, except for the wheat market. And so that's going to be kind of a hot button topic of conversation here. We're going to talk to Karen about that. But, man, we've got a lot of news today. And for sake of time,
we do.
Let's just jump into that. Let's get that going and cover it.
Sure thing, buddy boy. Well, wheat futures skyrocketed in today's trade, pushing up to last week's highs early in the session. That led to a round of short covering that carried futures higher throughout the day. Weather threats in wheat-growing regions around the world also added support as dry weather has Argentine wheat seeding projections on the decline, Black Sea growers fear lackluster yields, and parts of the EU, while having received beneficial rains of late, are expecting hotter, drier weather ahead. September hard red winter wheat 17¼ cents higher, 459.5. September soft red gained 24 cents, 550¾. September spring wheat sprang 8½ cents higher to close at 527¼. Ted.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And listen, I have a feeling we're gonna hear a lot more about that fund position when we talk to Karen. But as you mentioned, you know, we've got production issues kind of popping up all over the place. I would throw Australia in that as well. And that's interesting because what a tear wheat has been on, and today certainly included in that. But it's been more than a 70-cent rally off the lows just here in the last couple of weeks. It has been impressive. I want to know if that's going to start to affect the corn market at some point. And again, we're going to ask Karen about that too.
Very good. Well, corn futures fell away from overnight gains early in the session, but most contracts managed to close fractionally higher. Well, that's something anyway. More spotty rains in the Midwest limited the upside. USDA reported another round of corn sales today with 132,000 metric tons sold to China for delivery in the 2020 and 21 marketing year. Ted, get this. Since last Friday, USDA has reported a total of more than 3.2 million metric tons of corn sales to China. Rising Brazilian export forecasts limited buyer enthusiasm, but ethanol production increased in the most recent report as ethanol stocks slid. September corn futures 0.25 cents higher, 326¼. Dees corn also up 0.25 cents to 334 even. March corn, 344.5. Unchanged on the day. We got ethanol moving in the right direction. We got a ton of corn sales moving out to China, which everyone's like, when are they going to live up to their obligation? Right. And we're up 0.25 cents in the Dees.
Yep. So this is the question that I've been asked continuously since Friday. Why is the corn market not really responding to these Chinese sales? And I've got my thoughts on that. We are going to get into that a little bit, but I really want to hear what Karen has to say on that. I think Karen's got a lot to say about that. So this is going to be interesting. I'm also going to say, look at the rain that we've got. That has been the limiting factor, right? And today is a day where we are seeing rain on the forecast or on the radar. So it's really hard to get corn rallying on a day like today when we have that rain happening here on July 15th.
An excellent tease, by the way, just from a radio perspective. I mean, you know, now I really want to stick around and hear what's going on, what we have to talk about in the corn market later on. Soybean futures mildly higher in today's trade. Since funds are already long soybeans, it will take a significant weather threat or other catalyst to excite further buying. China bought 389,000 metric tons of 2020 and 21 beans in a daily sale today, but NOPA members reported June crush at the lowest figure in 9 months, and that weighed on the upside. August soybean futures, 8.25 cents higher, 8.86¼. September beans gained 6.5 to 8.80¾. November bean futures closed at 8.82¾. That's up 5¼ today, Ted.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, that NOPA number, okay, it was still quite a bit better than what the trade had been expecting. It blew away all of the projections, so it was a good number, and it was quite a bit better than what we were the same month last year. So that NOPA number shouldn't have been seen as a loss. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is our summer sort of maintenance season, so we do see that slow down a little bit at this time of year.
Yeah. October cotton, 10 points lower, 62.59. Dease cotton dropped 50 ticks, 62.13. Let's check your livestock side. Strength in the stock market buoyed cattle futures as vaccine trials are said to be going well. But cash trade is generally steady with last week, and boxed beef values have been under pressure this week. August live cattle futures, 250 higher, 101.30. Dease cattle gained $1.25 to 108.17.5. And August feeders stampeded 270 higher to 139.42.5. And on the snout side, lean hog futures were mixed today, fueling concerns the recent rally may have topped out. This as average hog weights continue to edge higher. August hogs, 22.5 cents higher, 50.15. December hogs off 22.5 to close at $51 even, Ted.
Yes, quite a stampede in cattle that was, Davis. Good, good, good. We like seeing that here today. So, all right, man, thanks for the news. That is great. But without further ado, I want to get to Todd Bubba Horowitz. Bubba, what's up, buddy? Hey, man, I was listening to the show last week Wednesday, and we were really excited about things going higher and looking to buy things. Well, after everything that's happened Friday and Monday in particularly, are we liking it even better now? What do you think?
I think it's a little depressing. I think it lays on to the fact that you just stated about the too much supply. And one of the problems is we haven't had any events that have disrupted supply, so the China exports don't mean a hell of a lot right now until something happens. And of course, you know, that with our economy basically still shut down, there's too much production, not enough buyers right now. I mean, that's really what it looks like now. Hopefully they'll stabilize and these equities will quit going straight up. I mean, that's another issue that takes money away from the ag markets, is the money going into equities every single day. You know, this lack of liquidity in these markets is just drilling equity straight up every day, which it just takes money away from alternative investments. So they're getting the grains are getting a double whack right now, and that's the way I see it.
Yeah. So in that climate, where double whacked, and the rains have definitely had something to do with that. Do you see this as a value buy here, or do you think it's a good time to kind of step away from the market at the moment?
Well, I mean, I at these levels for myself personally, I don't mind being a buyer because I'm willing to hold on to it just like a farmer. I'm going to put it in my own bins, right? And I'm going to wait. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
if you're
paper bins
or looking to get in and trade them, I would probably try to wait for a little bit more positive action and movement. Certainly, again, I don't mind buying these corn at 330 something, you know, 333. I mean, for me, I could put that away and hold it. But overall, I think the average guy, if you're trading it, you want to be careful. The farmer should be hedged all the time, so it doesn't matter. And so, again, if you're willing to hold, then you can hold. And if you're willing to hold and roll, then you'll get out eventually. But again, could it be faster? Everything depends on, A, the equity markets and what happens there, I think.
Awesome, Bubba. Thank you very much for your contribution. As always, everybody, that's Todd Bubba Horowitz. Come on back to AgriTalk. We're going to be talking to Karen Braun. Thanks, everybody.
AgriTalk! No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. My name is Ted Seifried. I'm from Zaner Ag Hedge, and I'm filling in for Chip Flory on this wonderful Wednesday. I guess it is if we're long wheat, I suppose. But aside from that, yeah, it's a pretty good Wednesday. Let's go with that. And today we're going to be talking to Karen Braun from Reuters. Karen, as I've said many times, I think is one of the smartest minds in our industry. She continuously puts out really, really wonderful information, both in her columns and also on her Twitter. If you're not following her on Twitter, you absolutely should. Karen, how are you doing? And also, could you remind us of your Twitter handle, please?
Yeah, sure, Ted. Well, thanks for having me again. And yeah, my Twitter handle, actually, instead of just saying it, type in my name, Karen Braun. Yeah. And you'll see it.
There you go. Yeah, because it's a little, I was going to say it, and it, I remembered it was a little bit complicated. But yeah, well, anyways, thanks for coming on the show, and hope all is going well out in Colorado. It was kind of a crazy day, especially in the wheat market. What's going on there? What are you seeing in wheat?
Well, you know, Ted, I think that people are kind of looking at global prices and kind of some of the risks that we have for some of the crops over the next year. And, you know, I think people were especially looking at that Russian sale to Egypt being $8 per ton more than they paid in another deal last week. So I think people were looking at that and seeing that, you know, prices were generally up. There's also Argentina has been really dry, and there's been news there again this week, kind of with that dry weather pattern and heading into a potential, you know, La Nina pattern for late in the year. And so I think people are looking at that and you know, wondering, are supplies getting a little bit tighter than maybe we thought?
Right. And if you look at the market structure going into this last 10 days or so, you know, we had a little bit of a short speculative position, right? I mean, what are you seeing there as far as money flow?
Yeah, it's actually interesting because, you know, as you said, kind of early in the month, we were actually, you know, the managed money, the funds, we call them, we're actually short Chicago wheat for the first time in July since 2016. So they headed into this month, you know, fairly short. And actually, after everything that's happened over the last week, and including today, they actually might be flat as of today in their wheat position. So they may have erased all those shorts.
Yeah. So now the question is, do they want to go long or not? And that, you know, you can't answer that. I can't answer that. That will just be proven out over time. But I will say there's a nice little breakout to the upside in the chart. We have now gotten over the very key downward trending channel that we had been in. But I guess my question is, you know, a lot of this kind of centers around some production concerns that we have. We know that wheat is we grow a lot of winter wheat in a lot of areas of the world. So it doesn't really coincide necessarily with a lot of row crops, but spring wheat does. And so when we look at dryness in, say, like the Black Sea area, is that something that will ultimately affect corn? Because they grow a lot of corn over in the Ukraine.
Right. I mean, so in Russia is the one that grows the spring wheat, not Ukraine. So those spring wheat regions are further to the east, kind of far away from Ukraine. So those that area of Russia is definitely still having an issue. But parts of Ukraine and Western Russia, that's where they grow their winter wheat. They've definitely been a little bit dry, and the forecast is not too generous with the rain. So that is definitely an area I think that the market is watching, definitely in terms of wheat, but more so probably corn now, because, you know, the wheat harvest in that part of the Black Sea, I guess, is more or less done. So definitely for the corn going forward, kind of have to keep monitoring that. But one thing, Ted, that I'll say about the wheat is that, you know, we've kind of forgotten about Australia over the past 3 years because they've really had a series of terrible crops because they've been in a drought. And, you know, they're a huge exporter and they have not been able to really do much here in the last couple of years. So, you know, but now they've actually gotten some more rain. Their prospects are pretty decent, you know, for the first time in a couple of years. And and their production is actually seen rising almost 11 million tons from last year. And that could almost double exports. I mean, you're talking like maybe 8 or 9 million more tons that they could export this year than last year. So, I mean, looking at something like that, we really can't forget about that factor too. When we think about losing maybe a couple million tons in Argentina, you know, a little bit in the Black Sea, does all of those losses, does that add up to, you know, more or less than Australia potentially is going to offer?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I keep in mind.
So that kind of sounds like that might be a little bit of concern for an extended rally there in the wheat. And also, you know, if it's not something that's really affecting corn, you know, we've seen a lot of big purchases from China in corn here since last Friday, or I guess last Thursday.
Right.
It really begs the question, though, why is China buying corn?
We know, Ted, I think that they have actually kind of depleted their reserves a little bit, at least kind of their temporary reserve. And we all know that China has a ton of corn and it's an unspecified amount. No one knows exactly how much, but, you know, they have actually kind of run down their supply a little bit over the past year. And they've been auctioning off quite a bit of corn, I think almost 20 million tons since the beginning of June, if I'm not mistaken. And that's almost about as much as they auctioned all of last year. So they're, and their prices are up. So so not only are our supplies kind of tight in the places that need it, but also the cost of imported corn is lower than their domestic corn. And even with the U.S. tariff, you're still almost, you know, $20 to $30 per ton cheaper importing U.S. corn, you know, for end users there.
Yeah. And, you know, I've also heard some people say that there's a little bit of flooding issues down in the south and east, which is about 20% of their corn crop. Do you think that has some motivating factor for them as well?
You know, it could. I know that area is a little bit more of their rice area, but, you know, I'm sure.
Canola.
But it's all connected. I mean, it's all connected. And, you know, especially if you're going to be transporting anything across the country, any kind of, you know, grain movement, I mean, flooding certainly would impact that. So I think that it all really plays a factor. I mean, just kind of the state of their reserves, the flooding, kind of this trade deal, you know, the availability of corn on the world market. I think it all really plays a role.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So regardless of the reason, you know, the market really has not responded to the big purchases that we've seen from China. Davis at the top of the show was talking, I think, what, 3.2 million metric tons roughly just in the last 5 days. Yet we haven't really seen any upward mobility in the corn market. Why do you think that is?
Right. I mean, you know, and I've been saying it. I think that people have been, you know, in over the past couple of years, people have, you know, said, well, hey, if China comes in and buys a bunch of corn, you know, we're really going to take off here. And now China's buying more corn than I think that really anyone expected, maybe in this short of a time frame. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're not responding. I mean, I think a lot of it, you know, like we've been talking about, has to do with the U.S. weather forecast and the fact that, you know, we might not really be losing too much production from this recent dry spell. But I also think that we have to remember that China doesn't import China does not import that much corn relative to what they use. So right. The USDA actually has them importing a record 7 million tons, both in 1920 and in the next marketing year. That's only 276 million bushels. So when you think about, you know, U.S. ending stocks, you know, in 2021, you know, projected now at, what is it, 2.65 billion bushels?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really not a huge chunk. And you know that China is going to be buying some of that from Ukraine, as they always do.
Yeah,
so
right.
The potential, at least as it stands right now, is not terribly huge.
Yeah, I think they're committed to buying 3 million metric tons from the Ukraine every year. So, I mean, that just leaves, four and change as far as our piece of the puzzle.
Sure.
And
unless they change. Yep. Unless they change.
Sure.
Unless they change those things. Yep.
Do you think it's possible for them to change the things? China likes to kind of rebuild the reserves.
Right. So by things, we're talking about really the tariff rate quotas, you know, where they have a certain amount that they're allowed to
TRQs.
Import at a very low tariff rate or, you know, virtually none. So, and that's what we're talking about by things, but, you know, that needs to change if we're going to be, you know, talking about, you know, 10 million tons, you know, the market was previously hoping for, you know, volumes like that.
Right.
Yeah, that would have to change. And I don't know.
I mean,
I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, trying to guess China's
exactly.
Yeah, pretty wild.
Not something I want to do.
No. Okay. So when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about corn. But until then, everybody, sit tight. We're talking to Karen Braun from Thomson Reuters, and we will be back here momentarily. It's time for Pro Farmer Headlines with Davis Michelson. Davis, what's the news that matters most today?
Well, Ted, encouraging results from an early-stage study on an experimental vaccine for coronavirus produced by U.S.-based Moderna gave stock indices a boost overnight. Trump ends preferential treatment for Hong Kong, saying Hong Kong will now be treated the same as mainland China. David Stilwell, the Assistant Secretary of State for East Asia, has said that the U.S. could impose sanctions on China as part of its new stance on Chinese maritime shenanigans. Indian soybean production will likely surge at least 15% from 2019. OPEC holds a key online meeting of its Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee today to recommend whether the alliance should maintain or taper oil production cuts. Hey, to get more news like this and details on these stories and much, much more, why don't you visit tryprofarmer.com right now?
Do it.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. My name is Ted Seifert. I am from Zahner Ag Hedge, filling in for Chip Flory on this, let's call it pretty awesome Wednesday, especially if you're looking at wheat. And yeah, we've been talking to Karen Braun, Thomson Reuters, and we just kind of started to get into a bit of an in-depth conversation into the corn market. I want to talk a little bit more about that when we come back to Karen. And then certainly we got to get to soybeans as well. But before we do that, we got to kick back over to handsome newsman, Mr. Davis Michelson, to get our quick market recap. Davis?
Well, Ted, I'm more than happy to report September hard red winter wheat 17 and one quarter cents higher, 459 and a half. September soft red gain 24 cents, 550 and three quarters today. September corn futures a quarter cent higher, 326 and a quarter. Dease corn also up a quarter cent, 334 even. August soybean futures 18 and one quarter cents higher, 886 and a quarter. Nobi beans closed at 882 and three quarters, up 5¼ cents today. October cotton 10 points lower, 62.59. August live cattle futures 250 higher, 101.30. August feeders up 270 to 139.42 and a half. And August lean hogs 22 and a half cents higher in mixed trade. Ted, there's your quick market recap. Back to you.
You are the man, Davis. I'm going to start calling this Wheat Wednesday because I feel like that's, well, that's where we're at. So, woohoo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll take
right.
it.
Yeah, we will take that. So, all right. Like I was saying, we were talking to Karen Braun, Thomson Reuters, and we started to talk about the corn market and why we haven't seen the corn market really respond to these big Chinese purchases, partially because of TRQ, as Karen was explaining. It sort of brings them to kind of close to their limit of what they might actually be able to import from us. But we also were talking about how China has sort of this agreement to purchase 3 million metric tons from the Ukraine. And that's a couple of years old. I'm not sure if that's still in place, but I believe they do still import a fair amount from the Ukraine in that general vicinity, general number or amount of corn. So I think that brings us to an interesting point that I know people that are really tight balance sheet watchers know this, but a lot of us don't really get how the world has changed as far as where we're growing corn, who's exporting corn, and the market shares that we have. So I wanted Karen to talk about that a little bit because I know she does a lot of research there. Karen, why don't you take it away? I know this is your thing, so go right ahead.
Yeah, Ted, no, like you were saying, I just think that it's really important now more than ever when we're looking at, you know, corn prices or soybean prices and wondering why we, you know, these big sales are not generating bigger moves in futures or why, you know, some production loss maybe isn't as concerning as it used to be. I think that a lot of times we forget just how much the competition has really grown, especially in the corn market, over just the past, I would say, 8 years, even less. So I'm going to give some interesting figures here. And this is according to USDA numbers. And so for 2021, the upcoming marketing year, U.S. corn production is forecasted to make up 33% of the world's total crop. Now, that compares with 40% 20 years ago and 50% 60 years ago.
Oh.
When we look at the exports for 2021 of corn, USA is projected to account for 30% of the total. That was 50% 10 years ago, 65% 20 years ago, and more than 80% 40 years ago. So we really have had huge growth, not only in production, but just like export capacity.
Yeah.
And a lot of price competitiveness from Ukraine, Brazil, and Argentina on corn.
Yeah.
And I can give you I can give you the same for soybeans, because you know what? We do have a similar trend, maybe not as extreme, because we do really have only, like, Brazil is our only biggest competitor there with soybeans.
Sure.
But the trend is interesting as well. So I'm going to do the same thing with the US soy crop. 2021, we are projected to grow 31% of the world's crop.
Mm-hmm.
That was 45% 20 years ago, and almost 75% of the total world soybean crop 50 years ago.
Mm.
Now for exports, we're forecasted to export 35% of the world total. Just 10 years ago, that was 45%. That was about 2/3 of the world's total in the early 90s, and almost 100% in the 70s.
Mm. So, what I hear you saying is that while global demand has risen, so has global production. And really, in particular, we've lost a fair amount of market share in both corn and soybeans. And it also, by the way, guys, makes us so very sensitive to the US dollar, which has been really rather strong over the course of the past couple of years. Yes, we've seen areas of weakness, but that strong dollar really impacts what Karen's talking about right now. So that is a big thing to kind of keep in mind. One more thing about corn before we do transition over to the beans, which you just started to do very, very nicely. But we got a question on Twitter from US Grain Watch asking, what about Mexico importing corn? Have not seen them in the market much lately. Now, it comes to mind that we saw a fairly large purchase from Mexico a week or two ago. But I think he's saying, we haven't seen that, popping up on the daily wires like we have been for China.
Yeah, we definitely have not seen the reportable, I guess, the daily reportable sales from Mexico. And, I'm actually not sure if that's if that's unusual. I'm taking a look at the total sales to Mexico for corn for 2021, and we're right about on the average for the last few years. So, we haven't sold more, but we haven't sold less. So we're kind of right in that sweet spot.
Yeah, and with the stocks that we have, and certainly the stocks that we have projected for next year, it'd be great if we can get some more business with Mexico. So Mexico, if you're listening, come buy some corn. It's on sale. So, hey. Anyways, okay, so soybeans. We talked about how we've kind of seen our market share slip in the soybeans as well. We did see China come in and buy some soybeans here today. It's not the impressive numbers that we've seen in corn yet. But do you think China's starting to kind of buy a little bit of soybeans? Do we see any upside potential for soybeans going forward?
Yeah, China's definitely bought a good amount of U.S. beans this week. We had, a flash yesterday of 129,000, a flash today of 389,000. And then we also had a report today that China was buying at least another 300,000. So we have a pretty good, week going here. But, when you go back to that market structure and we talked about the wheat and in corn, some funds are still, quite short. But when you look at soybeans, as of a week ago, they were just about 100,000 contracts long in soybeans.
Wow.
That's quite heavy. So when you start to look at, kind of, the upside potential, at least from that perspective, it gets a little bit tougher when you don't have as many shorts to cover. But with that being said, I mean, we do have a tighter balance sheet outlook going into next year. You know, we did not plant as many acres as we thought we would. And we still do need those kind of late July and August rains to really solidify, the bean crop we have going, which does look really good. So there is still some time, and we do see China back in the market. The one thing that is a bit concerning is those Brazilian bean shipments. As it was reported earlier this week that China imported more than 11 million tons of soybeans last month, and that was an all-time record for any month for China. And I'm sure everyone is aware of how many beans have been leaving Brazil over the past few months, but it is by far record. So that goes hand in hand. And so this kind of begs the question, well, how many more soybeans will China need this year once all those Brazilian shipments kind of arrive? That's kind of what we're dealing with the soybeans.
You obviously knew where I was going with this because, yes, that reads me very, very nicely into my next question. We have seen some pretty good sales to China. A lot of those have been for new crop. And in general, we've seen some pretty solid sales for new crop soybeans. In fact, if I compare to 2017, we're doing quite a bit better, almost 1 million metric tons better than where we were on this date in 2017. Yet in 2017, we ended up with about 100 million bushels higher export figure than what the USDA is currently looking at. So, do you think we're going to hit the USDA's target for new crop exports? Because if you look at the snapshot in time right now, it looks pretty good. But then I hear what you just said about the Brazil shipments and what's headed there right now. And that makes me think kind of twice about that. So where do you stand on it?
Yeah, and interestingly, last week on Friday, USDA, I think they were forced to, I don't think they had a choice, increase the exports. Soybean exports for Brazil. And in order to do that without having a negative carryout, they had to also increase the Brazilian soybean crop, which I've noticed, I think, has gone totally underreported in the past few years because, we used to be able to rely on Brazil running out of soybeans generally around now. And then, we take over and then, we're the supplier to China, through January. But it's been more than 2 years since Brazil has run out of soybeans in any meaningful way.
Well,
that's the concern.
Yeah, it's a concern. It is a concern. Okay. Well, time will tell. And that's how these things go, we'll just kind of have to see where it goes. But I'm optimistic about where our soybean exports could be going. I think the USDA is underestimating what we might see here this year. But that being said, Karen, it is always so much of a pleasure to have you on the show. You bring such wonderful data. Thank you again for joining us today, and have a good rest of your day. Everybody else, come on back to AgriTalk.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Corteva for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
AgriTalk of America and our neighbors to the north. This is Ted Seifert of Zahner Ag Hedge filling in for Chip Flory here on what I'm calling Wheat Wednesday. Because, the wheat rallied quite a bit today. But, we've been talking to Karen Braun of Thomson Reuters, and I really like those conversations with Karen. She always brings some really fantastic data to the table. She kind of really digs into that data. Karen, don't hate me. She's a bit of a data nerd, but we need these people. We need that, and she is great at analyzing it as well. And so, I really
Karen would own that.
Yeah,
I would dare say she might even appreciate that moniker. Sure.
I don't know. I have a feeling I might find out later if. Yeah. Who knows? But either way, one of my favorite guests to have on the show brings just so much to the show. I think it's great. And I really hope listeners appreciate, what she was talking about as far as market share, because that is it has changed. You know, a lot of times we wonder, you know, what's changed since the 80s? You know, what has changed in the world of agriculture? And that is one of the biggest things, is that the rest of the world has been encouraged to step up their game and really become major exporters and give us a lot more competition, which really means that, you know, competition is a direct reflection of what's going on with currencies, right? And so when we talk about what our price is versus their price, okay, but it's not all in the same currency. If there's a currency advantage, for example, we have a strong dollar and the Brazilian real or the Argentinian peso is weak, well, that makes their, even if we're priced the same, they have the advantage because their currency is cheaper. So that makes a big difference. And it's a different world we live in. And it's you know?
I would also throw in, for those levering, at least in the ag sector, for supply side management. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to start a firestorm here or whatever. You can tweet at us at hashtag AgriTalk if you like. But, you know, that just sort of accentuates the point. Sure, when we were like the supplier of commodities to the world, okay, to fine. You know, let's knock down the end rows and, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can boost prices, pull back supplies, keep carryover from snowballing. Fine. We don't have that luxury anymore, because if we knock down the end rows, Brazil is going to plant extra end rows and, you know, Russia's going to plant, you know, go on down the list. And that just occurred to me real quick here.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
It comes up every once in a while. Yeah,
it does. I mean, it's a global market. We are not the only ones. I will say that we would really like to be, and I think we have more potential in our corn exports to be a more dominant force on the corn side of things. South America and the soybeans, I mean, wow. They really hit the ground running with that, obviously. but limiting factor, US dollar. If we have a cheaper dollar, I think we can be in a good position to do a lot better on our corn exports. But again, that dollar is a limiting factor, and that is something that people should keep in mind.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but value buying is the bread and butter of the export market. Yes, between the United States and Canada, we grow the most visually pleasing, the most nutritious, the most delicious, the most useful corn in the known universe. This is a fact that's undisputable. But that extra little edge that we have quality-wise doesn't necessarily win us any friends in the export market, because what they're looking at is the price per ton and how cheap can we get it here. Fair statement?
Yep, fair statement. And again, all things remaining equal, they're going to prefer our corn over other countries. But like you said, if our price is the same as Argentina, but there's a currency advantage, convert your currency to an Argentinian peso cheaper than you can to the dollar, that's going to win out over slightly better quality. So, you know, that is a struggle, and that is something we really do need to keep in mind.
Let's if we can keep talking exports here, I've got a tweet. You in for a tweet?
I'm in for
it's
a
not
tweet.
The tweet of the Always. Day, but it's a tweet. This is from at Wadenel 8966 Niner381 just a few moments ago. Hashtagged at AgriTalk. Thank you. Question, are those shipments of soybeans from Brazil to China COVID-free? Mm-hmm. Are the shipments of beans from Brazil to China COVID-free, Ted?
That's a great question. You know, are the people on the ship COVID-free, I think, is the better question. I don't know how soybeans carry COVID.
Is COVID worse than ractopamine?
I'm not a scientist, but I think we've kind of come to the conclusion that pigs do carry surfaces. COVID doesn't live on surfaces for a long period of time, and if you've got soybeans sitting on a boat for 3 weeks, I can't imagine that is happening. So I'd say
salt water. Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Well, the bigger news in my mind is you just said the word that we don't mention anymore on the show, and that is tweet of the day. Oh boy,
that's what right. Do we do? Ooh. And I did. Somebody said I saw it. I'm scrolling downward here. Oh, at Farmer Bob Northwest Mo still misses the tweet of the day. He's one of the two. There have been two people who tweeted out, "Come on, dude, what about the tweet of the day?" I'm sorry. 2 out of 10 people that listen to this show want to hear the tweet of the day. Yeah. I just can't do it. It's not a high enough percentage. I can't do it.
All right.
I can't do it.
It's fair.
But I'll read.
It's fair,
read Farmer Bob Northwest Moe's tweet. I still miss the tweet of the day.
I miss Bob is what I'm going to say. So, all right.
I miss Bob, too. I don't see him nearly enough. I see him around Bob. Extra special love from me and Cool Breeze Ted Seifert today, buddy boy.
Bob's a great guy to get a steak with. So just so everybody knows. Really is. So right on.
Last time he was in town, I felt bad. He and the other tweet of the day guy, Ted the Hammer, came up to Pro Farmer Studios up in Sparkle City. And we were right in the middle of the show, and I felt so bad because they were doing a farmers meeting there in town. They had some farmers assembled, and they thought, "Well, let's head on up to Pro Farmer and say hello to the guys." And I was unable to connect with them, and I still feel guilty about that today. So
you should.
Ted, maybe not so much. I mean, Ted, I could see you anytime. Bob, let's get an iced tea sometime next time we're in proximity.
Absolutely. All right. Well, hey, listen, everybody. I've had a really great time, as I always do, hosting the show today. And guess what? I will be back again tomorrow talking to Sherman Newland. And also on 18, Tyne Morgan will have a conversation with Mike Newland of the Propane Express. So talented. So, everybody, great day of Ag Talk tomorrow. Hopefully, we'll see you then. Have a wonderful rest of your Wheat Wednesday.